It's 7 minutes after 10. I'm Kara LaRance. Glad you could tune in this morning to WMUK from Western Michigan University. My guest is music director of Portage Chapel Hill United Methodist Church, Caleb Williams. Welcome today.
Thank you so much.
The concert is called Requiem, A Concert of Hope. The program is set to be performed this Saturday at 7 p.m. and again at 9 a.m. at your home church, Portage Chapel Hill United Methodist. Let's talk about the concert and why you called it Requiem, A Concert of Hope.
We are clearly in an interesting time in this community. We are looking back now over a week to tragic violence that has shaken us, and there is a role for music and for faith to speak to some of that pain and grief that we are feeling. And I believe that this particular musical work can be a gift to this community in offering not just death, but something more in a vision of peace and hope.
That's what a requiem is traditionally about. It's about the death of someone. It's part of a ceremony in the Christian faith and the Catholic tradition, to be specific. And you have a degree in this kind of thing from Boston University? Yeah. Requiem, where does the foray requiem fit into the pantheon of requiems, which go back, well, how long do they go back?
Centuries. The requiem was a spoken form first. This is a mass for the dead. That requiem means rest, that's eternal rest give to them. The opening words of the musical work, Requiem Aeternam. And forays is an interesting departure from many of the traditions, particularly in his accenting some parts of the text and bringing in new texts to add to this. He has clearly a focus on peace, and it's demonstrated by removing a lot of the imagery of the end of the world that is wrapped up in this tradition, and squeezing that into a tiny moment in our second movement, where folks like Giuseppe Verdi and his famous Dies Irae pounding the drums and giant wailing chorus. The Dies Irae here is just a brief flash in the pan. And he adds entire movements of text, including the very last one called In Paradisum, this in heaven, in paradise, and giving us not that death is the end, but there is something there to be hoped for afterward.
Mm. In Brahms's case, he took Latin text and translated to German and just used the German language, his language, for this. Did Fauré go to French or did he stick to Latin?
He stuck with Latin. I think this was a different tradition, being a Catholic-dominated country, as opposed to Brahms in a more Protestant tradition, the Lutherans dominating there. So Latin was the language of faith for French folk.
And how was Fauré's faith?
This was perhaps his most religious work, and some folks have suggested that he took all his potential religious works and crammed them into one piece, this Opus 48.
So he wasn't a prolific church composer like some of his, you know, compatriots would have been. The great organists of that time in France were putting out amazing works, and there were a lot of incredible sacred composers and performers at the time. But Fauré was more of a secular kind of guy?
That's right. And there's also a tradition of suggesting that he wrote this as a way of processing the death of his parents. But it turns out he wrote in a letter that actually had nothing to do with it. But this was mostly just an exercise in religious music. So you can hear him wrestling with the church and some of the messages that they were sending to him. And I really appreciate that he was able to take the tradition and make it speak to his own way of interacting with the world.
Let's bring it back to the president and remind folks that the performance of Fauré's Requiem, among other pieces, the Requiem is only about 30 minutes long, correct?
Right.
That's on Saturday at 7 o'clock, and the venue is at the corner of Oakland and Romance. It's Portage Chapel Hill United Methodist Church, and there will be a second performance the following morning, Sunday morning.
Right, and we will be incorporating the many movements into a worship service. It's not an actual Catholic Mass, as we're a bunch of Methodists, but it's a way of showing how this musical work would be built into a liturgy, and that there will be an open communion during which this music is happening. The offering will actually be the offertory of the music, and a way to experience it in a more tangible way.
This is quite a coincidence that a few months ago I had an interview with Mr. White, who produced a performance of the Requiem by Fauré in Battle Creek. And then a few weeks later, I hear from you, and we set up a chance to talk about this Requiem. And then I look at my calendar, and lo and behold, the Kalamazoo Symphony is performing the Requiem as well. Is this just an amazing coincidence?
I think it is. We all saw that it had been a few years since this work had appeared in our area. And it's one of those staples that you need to come back to every few years. And every time you do, it means something new.
Mm-hmm. So did you end up laughing with some of the other conductors and musicians in
yes.
our community about this?
Well, in some ways, I've really enjoyed the chance to. I got to hear Steve's performance at St. Thomas. They did a lovely job. And theirs is quite different from what ours is going to be. Our choir is going to be a little bit larger, and the space is a little bit different. St. Thomas is a very traditional building with lovely architecture that helps create that certain sense, and they're wearing robes and very formal. Ours is going to be more in our contemporary Protestant tradition of folks in concert black, of an open square space built in the 90s. It's a very different experience.
Mm-hmm.
But then when the Kalamazoo Symphony performs it, they're doing an entirely different edition of the music set for the symphony orchestra.
Did Fauré write two versions of his Requiem?
He didn't. Well, he was around. we're not totally sure, in that there was an original edition that was finalized by 1893, and there was a later version for 1900, where we believe one of his students then orchestrated most of those out. So there isn't any new musical material, but new tonal colors that you'll hear from the orchestra.
Mm-hmm. So traditionally, which is the one that's more commonly used, or at least was for a long time?
Yes, the symphony version is why this work is so famous. It is a rousing and exciting and serene at times work that really tapped into the choral orchestral sort of energy of the first half of the 20th century.
Yeah, we saw orchestrations like this happening with even the Messiah, and you know, it was just, if you're going to put voices and orchestra together, you may as well just go big.
You may as well have 1,000 of them, yes.
But sometime later, people came along and said, we should look at this original version that Fauré composed it and maybe intended for it to be heard as.
Yes, Sir John Rutter went back in the 1970s and 80s to dig into this work. He's not exactly a scholar, and some parts of his edition have been improved upon in the last 20, 30 years, but he did a really nice job as a performer and composer trying to dig into what Fauré was originally intending and how the context of those performances might inform ours.
Maybe we should begin at the beginning. Would you introduce this opening part of Gabriel Fauré's Requiem? And here in my hand, I have the John Rutter Cambridge Singers recording from the early 90s, maybe late 80s, 85, I'm sorry, it's
right.
1985. That year won a gramophone record award because I think for a long time this had not been heard in a chamber style recording.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. This is an astounding way to start a piece of music. It's one we practiced back in grad school for each other. It is just one very loud D.
We're listening to music from The Requiem by Gabriel Fauré. If you just tuned in, my guest is the music director of Portage Chapel Hill United Methodist Church, Caleb Williams. And in a remarkable turn of events, the Fauré Requiem is in the air this entire season in West Michigan. And all three performances, one has already taken place in Battle Creek, this one this weekend, features the church choir at Portage Chapel Hill, and then the Kalamazoo Symphony is presenting for a different version of this work. And we were leading into this musical example by talking about how Fauré orchestrated the piece and published it in 1893 as a piece for smaller forces, as we heard in this recording from John Rutter, who kind of as you said, unearthed or reconstructed the
original?
That's
right, yeah. It wasn't too hard once he found all the proper manuscripts, but they were created at different times. This work was composed, Movement 6 was actually first, some 3 years before the others. And then the first five movements came, and the In Paradisum eventually. And somehow combining into this really well-rounded seven-part form.
It's so funny. You think that, you know, for a composer, if you sit down to write a requiem, you start at the beginning and just work your way through, check, 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 all the way to the end. But composers don't necessarily work that way at all.
It's wild and practical, and I appreciate that he was a real person who was writing for real gigs. And someone needed that Libera Me before they needed the rest of this.
So what is the orchestration that we'll hear on Saturday and Sunday?
It's unusual in that we've got a string ensemble, very small to balance out our choir, but no violin. So it's multiple parts of viola, cello, bass, and harp and horns, along with our organist, who will be playing the original organ part, not the expanded one. And there is something lovely about these low strings bringing us in close and not covering up the voices quite so much as a symphony orchestra would. There is, however, one movement written for solo violin. So we brought in Anna Nordmo to play that, who's a young high school player, and well, she is amazing.
Yeah, Anna is a really exceptional talent from the Kalamazoo Junior Symphony.
Correct.
Right. Well, hopefully she's going to be around a few years more because her music is adding so much to our community. What challenges face the singers? I mean, what is this a difficult piece to perform?
This is what I would consider an entry-level masterwork, in that it is harder than the things you will sing on a normal Sunday to Sunday basis, but it is not Beethoven's Missa Solemnis. It is a real challenge in that it's all in Latin for our choir. This is a new thing. We're not used to singing in Latin, and folks have really engaged very well. And some of that has been the joy of reaching out in the community to bring new voices in. We've got a number of guests, and there's an untapped resource that I'm discovering in this community, and that is folks who went to music school and are now doing other kinds of jobs. There are so many of them out there with amazing talents, and to pull together a group of folks who are working in nonprofits and teaching in schools but haven't had the opportunity to let loose their own talents in a while, the energy and excitement of these musicians is just inspiring.
Going back to your music school days, did you learn Latin pronunciation here at Western?
Sure did. Yes. It was, we refined it in grad school later.
Yeah.
So that we would, we could be dealing with, French pronunciations of Latin and what would be appropriate for different regions and different decades. But we are dealing with an Italianate pronunciation. It's something like you would hear if you were walking around the Vatican today.
Why the Italianate? I don't understand, because, Fauré is French. Is it because of how popular Italian opera was at the time?
There's a lot of that. It tends to be that the Roman pronunciation is the strongest and most universal of the Latin pronunciations, not surprisingly. But it's also that, if I might be prejudiced here, the vowels and shape of the Italian pronunciation sing a little bit easier. They're beautiful, open vowels, ready, and when you're dealing with French, you're going to have more nasals to deal with, some more diphthongs that are subtle. This is a really great way to make it easy to understand and easy to pronounce.
I'm going to just throw one at you that you may not know at all, but I was wondering if in England they pronounce Latin a little differently. The reason I ask is I had a Barnaby Smith on the line, and he is a singer, a countertenor for what I would pronounce Voces 8, and mm-hmm. he said it's Voces 8 is how you say. And I just wondered, is there a slight difference of how Latin is, the tradition of pronunciation is in England?
Absolutely. There are English pronunciations. Now, brilliant groups like Voces 8, they will pronounce whatever is appropriate for the work. And we will be pronouncing with that ah sound as well. So we've got the offertorium, domine is our pronunciation.
Instead of offertorium,
yes,
domine.
Yes. However, there are funny old English words like long live the queen, when it's sung in some musical works, is if it would be Italian, it would be vivat regina. If it were in an English pronunciation, which I am afraid I don't prefer, it's Vivat Regina.
That's different.
Yes.
Viva Regina. This has a little more of a sing-songy quality.
Yes.
To it. Well, thanks for letting me go down that little cul-de-sac on
Glad
Latin pronunciation. Let's pick out another beautiful moment from the Pia Jesu and talk about your soloists.
Yes.
I'm sorry, from the Requiem. I just gave it away, didn't
Oh, we did. Yes. Movement 4, that's the central movement of the 7, is this serene soprano solo. Our honor to invite Anne-Marie Boyle, who is a local performer and connected with Early Music Michigan. She has a lovely light sound that can give us a hint of the original treble sound that that he may have been writing for, as in writing for boy choristers, but with so much more color and depth of interpretation.
Anne-Marie Boyle studied early music at Indiana University, so she has access to the different styles and the purity of tone and things that you might want to change up for different kinds of music.
Yes, yeah. It is a joy to work with folks like that. We also are bringing in Joel Snyder, who's a student here at Western. He is a master's student in conducting, but he already has a master's in voice. And it's a lovely and just inviting sound.
Is he the baritone soloist then?
Correct. Wow. Just two soloists on the voice here, soprano and baritone.
I had my fingers crossed that maybe you would turn around and sing yourself with this.
That would be fun, but I'm not sure how it would conduct in the meantime.
That's true. All right, well, let's take a moment and hear this Pia Jesu, a very famous excerpt of the Fauré Requiem. And in this recording, we have a soloist with the Netherlands Chamber Choir and Orchestra. And she sounds, to my ears, a little more of the, you know, female soprano rather than period.
Correct,
yeah.
Correct.
But very nice recording. Could we listen to that again? Because it's so beautiful. The Pia Jesu movement from the Fauré Requiem. And usually I just talk about it, oh, it's so pretty, and then we move on to the next thing. But maybe you could talk about the text or what this moment really means.
Absolutely. When I hear this work, I picture Michelangelo's Pietà, which is a bit of a stretch, but it has to do with this this mercy element, this gracious Jesus here who is both a loving but also a suffering symbol. And so this beauty that we're hearing is hopefully not just a surface level beauty, but someone who is also dealing with the deep stuff of life. And I think particularly as we try and create a concert of hope, that is a message to speak.
It's generating empathy as the music works itself through, I think.
Yeah.
There's an underlying feeling of buoying you up a little bit.
Yes, exactly.
Perhaps.
Yeah, and I think it's something, it's a little bit like it's a lullaby sung to us in that we've been hurting and this voice is speaking to us that we are being held in this. You know, I've clung to an old phrase that sound is touch at a distance. And I think this moment is going to be Anne-Marie and the orchestra giving the audience something of a hug.
Let's tell folks again when and where this concert is.
We have this Saturday night at 7 p.m. at Portage Chapel Hill United Methodist Church. That's at the corner of Oakland and Romance. And we would like everyone to come. And as a way of putting our money where our mouth is, this is absolutely free to the public. And we hope that nothing will stand in the way of you hearing a message of hope.
Requiem, a concert of hope, 7 o'clock this Saturday. And as part of a worship service, again on Sunday morning at 9 a.m. You're nothing if not an efficient music director, I must say, Caleb, to recycle beautiful music. I mean, if you're going to hear it once, you may as well use it again.
That's right. That's right. And I really believe that music is contextual. And the chance to hear it both as a concert work and as a liturgical work back to back, each of those will have something different to say.
The members of your choir, you've already mentioned having realized how many talented people are in our community, just working at jobs that are not necessarily arts related, but do they also plan to participate in, say, the upcoming KSL version, or do you have singers that work in other choirs besides Portis Chapel Hill
members? We do have singers who are crossing over. I don't believe we have any who are going to be doing the concert with the KSO as our, but we did have folks who were singing with the Kalamazoo Singers just last weekend. It's fun. It's still a small town sometimes where we get to meet all these folks, but there are always more musicians coming out of the woodwork.
Yeah, sure are. So the centerpiece of this concert is the Foray Requiem, and we still have plenty of time to touch on some of the other pieces in the program, but I'd like to see if there's maybe one more movement that we should highlight from the Requiem to talk about.
It's a toss-up. My very favorite musical moments are in Movement 5, the Agnus Dei. But Movement 7 is also the final message of hope. So maybe we'll save Movement 7 for when you're actually at the concert. But Movement 5, the very first measure, is coming right out of the end of the Pia Jesu we just heard. And we've been lulled a little bit. And in comes this new depth of joy.
We're getting caught up in the music of the Requiem of Gabriel Fauré. My guest is Caleb Williams, who will be conducting the work Saturday night in a free concert at Portage Chapel Hill United Methodist Church. The piece will be performed as part of the service following morning, Sunday at 9 a.m. at Portage Chapel Hill, which is at the corner of Oakland and Romance. We're trying to sum up some of the things, Caleb, that make this Requiem piece so special. I think we've done a pretty good job of touching on a few. Just watching you listen to this last movement of the...
It's so good. Oh, man.
You were saying there's actually some really sophisticated harmonies going on, and I was like, all I hear is this beautiful tune. But he's, you know, you can listen to this as like a theorist, if you like.
Absolutely. But for me, it's the drama that he puts in here. Yes, these lovely melodies that pull you in, and these harmonies for the nerds in the audience like me. But the drama of the moment of light coming in. We've begun, and we have all this imagery of the Lamb of God and this communion-driven Eucharist imagery. And out of that, we suddenly hear this, the whole orchestra stop, and only our sopranos hold as gently as they can this single high note on an oo vowel of lux, which is light. Suddenly, and we re-enter after this complete stoppage of time with brand new harmonies that start roiling around, and we can't quite find where the tonal center is, and eventually bringing us back into this new climax of passion, and the horns and cellos start swirling as the choir just gives up, and the orchestra takes over this drama and pathos. And out of that silence, we get to hear the return of the joy again.
Isn't that wonderful about and interesting about music and how we experience it, as some of us will, we all take something different away from a musical performance. One of the great things is we're all silent as we listen, and everyone is having their own, they're creating a narrative of themselves with the music, hearing different things. I'll be listening to one thing, you'll be hearing another. And in this case, a Mass for the Dead, it can, you know, as an audience member, I can make it about of the recent passing of my father. I can be remembering the victims of the killings just recently. It's something, no one is actually dictating to you how to feel and what to do. You
yes.
can just be there to honor someone in your own mind.
That's right.
You know?
Yeah. And it is an entirely personal affair, but it's also a communal motion that we're doing this together, and somehow in doing that together we're honoring one another's struggles and journey.
Well, I would like to hear about some other music that you thought was special enough to include on this program with the incredible masterpiece, as you called it, the Fauré Requiem.
Yes, I love programming concerts, and this one in particular has been something of a planning my own funeral music. And I've gotten to touch on these pieces that really speak to what I have been exploring and understanding about life and death and what may or may not be beyond it. And one piece that I had met when I was a student here at Western was Eliza Gilkison's Requiem, which was arranged for choir and piano by Craig Hella Johnson, who is one of my musical heroes. He's the director and founder of Conspirare, which is both an ensemble and a movement down in Austin, Texas.
So tell me about Conspirare and Eliza Gilkison? Gilkison?
Gilkison. Well, no guarantees that I'm pronouncing it right. This was a folk work that Miss Gilkison wrote and recorded with herself playing guitar and singing a folk song in tribute to the Indonesian tsunami, which rocked half the world, you know, some 15 years ago. It was then readapted and taken into a choral realm by Craig Hella Johnson right about the time of the Katrina disaster down in New Orleans and the Gulf Coast. And the work is dedicated, quote, to victims of natural disaster. And there's something of a folk faith happening in it. There's religious imagery and there is personal struggle all wrapped into this really warm and gentle melody.
Well, let's give it a listen and then we'll be back for a last moment here with Caleb Williams, the music director of Portage Chapel Hill United Methodist Church, which presents Requiem, a Concert of Hope, on Saturday at 7 p.m. and again Sunday morning, 9 a.m. That's a piece by Eliza Gilkison, who is a folk artist, you said, Caleb.
That's right.
And down in Austin, Texas, where I hear they have almost as good a musical community as Kalamazoo, yeah. The head of sort of a virtuoso choir, Craig Hella Johnson of Conspirare, just heard this as a sort of guitar and voice piece and changed it into this beautiful setting.
That's right. And he's a person who is very open about sharing his own story of loss, and it is a tremendously personal work for him, and became special to me at learning it as a student. And it was a real joy to reunite with some of my old college comrades in singing, in performing it for this concert. So we have at least three old folks from the WMU Chorale who are still in town contributing to our community.
That's great. Well, we just have a few more minutes until the news, so let's sum it all up once again. The name of the concert, you've titled it?
Requiem, A Concert of Hope.
And the details once again.
Saturday, 7 p.m. at Portage Chapel Hill United Methodist Church. And again, with just the Requiem integrated in worship at 9 a.m. the following morning. That's Sunday, March 6th.
And both presentations are free and open to the public. A free will offering will be accepted. Some of the other works on the program we haven't quite gotten to.
That's right. You just heard Requiem, arranged by Craig Hella Johnson. We'll also be performing one of my favorites, Souls of the Righteous by Geraint Lewis. And it's Thy Hand, Belinda, Dido's Lament from Dido and Aeneas by Henry Purcell.
Oh, well, that's just for me, that's worth a ticket myself. And yeah, no tickets. So thank you so much, Caleb, for coming in and sharing this musical achievement. And I'm sure you're looking forward to Saturday.
Oh, I am so excited. This is going to be a really special night for our community.
Well, thanks again.